The chiral auxiliary. Let's revisit that topic in a little bit more coherent fashion. And let me summarize it verbally first. It all comes down to what do we do about the problem of enantiomers. The problem being that if we're trying to separate compounds, we need some way to separate them. So, for example, if we had two different melting points, then we could melt something while the other stays solid if they didn't dissolve in each other. If we had different boiling points, we could do distillation. If they have different densities and if they're not soluble in each other, we could even just do a simple separation by a separatory funnel. There's chromatography. There's TLC. There's all these different ways that we could separate compounds, but they depend on the compounds having some physical property that's different between the two of them. The difficulty with enantiomers is they don't have anything different except optical rotation. In optical rotation, we only know that that's different if we pass light through it. And that's the key phrase. It passes through it, doesn't do anything to it. So we can't use that to separate the compounds. Unless there's some weird laser lab in Caltech somewhere where they're able to somehow move molecules one at a time by light just on the basis of their optical rotation. Otherwise, us mere mortals can't separate out enantiomers. So the whole idea behind the auxiliary is you make something different. And the only other example that we've had during the whole year of that kind of situation, and I know this might be a useless example, is when we talked about enantiotopic and diastereotopic protons. Think back, if you can remember that discussion, we talked about molecules in which if you put them in achiral solvents, that there are these different positions in the molecule that would not be chemically inequivalent. In other words, by putting it in an achiral environment, these different positions would act the same. Putting them in a chiral environment, then you have a unique interaction going on between the solvent and that molecule you're trying to scan that would change if you used the other enantiomer, let's say, of the solvent. And so then you had a difference in the scanning behavior of whatever you're trying to analyze. It's the only other parallel we've had this whole quarter. But since we haven't been doing NMR, and if I asked anybody right now, tell me a firm definition for what enantiotopic protons are, there might be this kind of pause right there. So coming back to the present example, if we have two different enantiomers, we attach something else to both enantiomers. To switch examples a little bit, let's say that we did this reaction. So I have a methyl ester of a compound that's both a ketone and a carboxylic acid. Let's say that I first reduce this with sodium borohydride. Let's say I then saponified and then use gentle acid workup. Well, sodium borohydride is only going to react with a ketone, correct? So the carboxylic acid survives, but we end up with an alcohol. Under sodium hydroxide, we're not going to get that alcohol to leave because the alcohol is at the alpha position. In those cases where we've eliminated hydroxide, it's when the alcohol was in the beta position. So it will saponify the ester. In other words, we're going to end up with this. Two molecules, they're enantiomeric, only one stereocenter. They're carboxylic acids. Now, what if you reacted both of them with this amine, a chiral amine? Well, the amine is not going to change its structure regardless of which of the carboxylic acids it reacts with. It will neutralize the carboxylic acid, so you'll end up with an ammonium ion. In solution, that ammonium ion could float back and forth between the two molecules. But since you're only using one amine to react with both molecules, it doesn't really matter where the reaction occurs versus where that amine ends up. In other words, you're going to have the same type of salt no matter what. You'll have one salt made from one enantiomer. And then one salt made from the other. If you were to remove the solvent and turn these into solids, presume they would make solids if they're salts, well, they're now different compounds from each other. Because what is the configuration of this amine stereocenter, R or S? R. And then on the left hand of the two products, is that R or S? It is also R. So notice R, S, these are just enantiomers. But now look down below here. Yes, the alcohol is still R on the left, it's still S on the right, but it's also attached to a salt that does not have a different configuration. It's R for both of the salts. So if we look at the pair of stereocenters, one is RR, one is SR. Between these are diastereomers. Diastereomers have different physical properties than each other. So now they can be separated. So when you just have enantiomers, it's very difficult to separate them because their physical properties are the same. If we can somehow make some new complex that has one more stereocenter in it, and if we use that same stereocenter in making complexes out of both enantiomers, we now produce effectively diastereomers, which can then be separated. In this example of having just made a salt, if we were to then expose these compounds to hydrochloric acid again, then we'll release the salts, get back the carboxylic acids, but now they'll be separated. So up here with enantiomers, I could say difficult to separate. I'll say same physical properties as long as you all know there is the one caveat that the enantiomers do have different optical rotation. Ignoring that one aspect of it, when we get down to the diastereomers, as long as you choose the right kind of salt, they're easily separated because they'll have different physical properties. Maybe precipitate out. I don't know exactly in this case what's going to happen. Maybe one is more water soluble, one isn't. I'm not sure. So you have to, and for different situations, this kind of thing has been done before. I just haven't personally done it. So in one particular scenario, you could investigate to figure out what would be the best way to separate those compounds. Maybe in certain cases it'll be a distillation. Maybe in this case it's forming different salts. Maybe once the salts forms, they crystallize. And one compound would be more likely to crystallize with itself than with its diastereomeric cousin. So maybe it's just the process of crystallization that would separate them. But one way or another, we could use the fact that they are different compounds to separate them, and then when we decompose this complex again, since we already separated the diastereomers, now the enantiomers are separate. Is that a more understandable presentation? I know that I must have truly been having And my low points, it's just like the stock market. It just keeps getting lower and lower here. I had person after person that asked me, wait a minute, you mentioned methionine, but then what was that mechanism to cleave it? You didn't go over that. Well, yeah, I did. I did it on Monday, but I guess I did it so poorly you didn't even remember that I had done it. So I will try to do it again, this time from memory, because then this time that means I'll make myself muddle through it. So methionine is what structure? It is two carbons, a sulfur, and a carbon coming off of the R group, correct? So if we're just going to write that amino acid, if we're going to do it the way I did it the other day, which is to put the amino portion of that into the plane, then I'll have a dash there. Here's our two carbons. Here's our sulfur, and one more carbon after that. Gesundheit. And I'll simplify on either end here by just saying R. The whole point about the reactivity of this methionine is that the sulfur is able to be alkylated. When we do that, the sulfur is able to become a leaving group, and we're going to end up making a ring with the oxygen that's over here that's part of methionine itself. So before I do this the second time, realize we're going to alkylate here, and then we're going to do a ring closure. So when I rewrite this, I'm going to attempt to do this myself in such a way that I have it set up to make the ring more easily. And I did just put an extra carbon there, didn't I? I said it out loud correctly, but drew it down wrong. It's all because of that silly contact point with the dash line. I just wanted to use this again, I know. One, two. No, now I put the sulfur in the wrong place. Yes, Kevin? One, two. Can Dr. Gray count to the number two? So it reacts with the cyanogen bromide. Kicks off bromine as a leaving group. SN2 reaction. Now I'm going to rewrite this from the right-hand side. One, two carbons, sulfur that is positively charged with a methyl group and one lone pair. Here's the rest of the amino acid chain. And now it's drawn more correctly so we can more easily see that nitrogen attacking, pushing open the carbonyl, which crosses over, kicks out not there. I'm holding it the right way, but oh, it's gotten twisted. So the old-fashioned way. There we go. Kicks the sulfur group out. We make the five-membered ring, which is a nitrogen analog of a lactone. And the point here is that when we hydrolyze, we cleave the polypeptide. Technically, we first turn it into a normal lactone, but that continues to hydrolyze. So technically, what we end up with at the end is a combination carboxylic acid alcohol. So that is the decomposition of a polypeptide chain at methionine. Now, I've decided not to cover the HVZ reaction, the other way for synthesizing amino acids. So we're done with content material for the exam. We have time. Do we have questions? Amino acid style questions. Yes? Use what? I'm sorry? Oh, I know I stopped using the dash here because it doesn't really matter. Technically, yes, but all we really care about is the fact that the chain is being cleaved. So I guess for simplification, you could leave it out. It does matter. Stereochemistry always matter, but I left it out here because it wasn't the focus of this mechanism. Other questions? Then this is somewhat out of order, I realize, but we only have next week, and for you all, we also have Monday. You've got one more day of lecture than the other section, Section 3, has. The problem that happens every year with 12C is the final, because you get to carbohydrates, and from what I've graded from the exam so far, it looks like those grades are going to be good. I'm hoping that you all have clearly enough had the types of problems I'm going to put on this exam communicated to you. The only way I think you would do poorly on this exam is if you're starting the day to study. And I warned the other section of this more prominently, maybe didn't give you the same strength of warning. And this is something I'll just have to start from the beginning the next time I do this to warn people. Is that I have an expectation that you have proficiency and not just recall on a topic. It's my guess that the reason you all didn't finish the exam, if you had had the 10 minutes extra that you should have, wasn't so much the length of the exam, it was that I'm guessing no one had written any of those structures down in practice before. Like, how many of you before the exam had actually written a cyclic sugar, practiced writing out? Okay, so some of you had, but I didn't see the whole class's hands go up. How many of you had practiced writing any of the mechanisms, like the ring opening and closing and changing back and forth between aldehyde and ketone forms? So some hands kind of go, we did that one, not that one, we did that one. So let me ask you this. How many of you have actually drawn a dipeptide other than from the notes? Right. How many of you have practiced writing out the, and I know it's on the lab exam, so you got more time to study it, so I can understand that you didn't do it yet, but still. How many of you have done a dipeptide synthesis, the Merrifield resin, writing it out once? Yeah. How many of you have written out or the portions of the ninhydrin mechanism you need to know, the DCC mechanism? Right. So, and this is, and Friday's the exam. That's kind of my point. So if you had already been studying, you would have been fine for Friday. If you're just now starting to study, you may still be fine because you already know what the questions are. Well, I don't know. What do we have from the notes from the other day? The questions are... A take-home exam. You would never want a take-home exam from me. I guarantee it. Because it would be complete and thorough and detailed enough, you would never want to take one. Because I know that if I give you a take-home exam, that it's going to end up with people working on it together. I could yell and yell and say, if I catch you, it'll end up failing you, but I know I won't catch some people. And so it would have to be a difficult enough exam, way difficult enough exam, to make it worth me considering it. So you all wouldn't want it. As far as the questions on the exam, what is PI and how do you determine it? How is that related to electrophoresis? What's this ion exchange chromatography stuff? What's the mechanism for ninhydrin? How can you synthesize amino acid by the thalamidyl amino melodic ester synthesis or by the Strecker method? What's primary, secondary, tertiary, quaternary protein structure, and how could you sequence something? I mean, that's, I'm just reading off of what we talked about on Monday. It hadn't changed since Monday. L versus D, of course. And then we were rattling off trying to count the amino acids before class, so I'll do that one more time for everybody. We have glycine, alanine, valine, leucine. We didn't actually all ever talk about isoleucine, so as far as what we did in here. Then we had serine, cysteine, aspartic acid, lysine, proline, phenylalanine, tyrosine, methionine, and tryptophan, which that's 13 that I count. So, any other questions about amino acids? Now, I was leading us into a final review, because here's what I was trying to lead up to. The difficulty with the final exam is that you get all this carbohydrate stuff, and it's more interesting for some of you than any of the rest of OCHEM, because at least it's not a mechanism everywhere. At least there's something bio in there. And then same thing with the amino acids. And then we go back to the final, and oh my gosh, yeah, there's esters and amides and reductions and oxidations and all these things that you'd forgotten about because we haven't been doing them for 6 weeks because we've been doing carbohydrates and amino acids. And every year it's like this psh, that people get when they get to the final. It's like, oh, I forgot about all that stuff. And that's why I wanted to do some review today. But I saw one hand go up a minute ago. Yes? Let me say it this way. The only thing that I have said is not on the exam and is on the lab quiz instead is the Merrifield resin synthesis, which along that with that means the Bach, the mechanism of what is it, and then the DCC. I did not finish writing the exam. I have started because I guess I'll let the cat out of the bag. Due to certain circumstances, I'm letting a couple people take it tomorrow instead of Friday, which means I have to have the exam written by tomorrow. If tonight, once I finish, I decide, wow, that's a long exam, then maybe another topic will be cut. I'm not going to tell you now, though, because why should I? You need to know the material, so you need to know the material. End of story. Yeah. No, I was trying to work on that during the lab, but we ended up having discussions about education instead, which were interesting enough to me that I made the judgment call. I could have just ignored you all, but I did, and I continued it too, because how often do you actually get to hear me interact like that? Because aside from all the other things going on in class and all the distractions that are going on, there is the side of me that actually does have some thoughts, some concerns about education that you all never get to hear about because I never get to talk about them, which is actually one of the big problems that I've had with this year. Well, even what is IBPT? We had a long talk about access to resources and diversity and how that affects education and what is the goal of education and what is society's role in ensuring education. All these big, huge topics that, yeah, I have an opinion on, but never get to talk. So I did that instead of posting the notes this morning. So when I get home, which will be about 8:30 tonight, I'll upload the audio. The written parts of it I can upload in lab, but I did try to... Something changed on DeAnza's network about a month or two ago where I could not quickly access my home computer through a virtual window. Now, when I move the mouse, about 10 seconds later, it happens on the other side, where it used to be instantaneous. Why it changed, I don't know, can't fix it. So the audio's trapped at home at the moment. Now, back to this final exam review. Yes? A take-home final. I really, you know... As a student, I can remember thinking, oh, wow, take-home exam. The take-home exams I remember having sucked. They were painful. That's what I'm saying. You don't really want one. Really. You think you do, but you don't. Trust me. Huh? There's always a first time. Yeah, there's always a last time, too, once there's a first time. Hmm? You know, you can keep on trying, but it ain't going to change, you know. It's just like when you got a hurricane, you're blowing back against it. Okay, stop, hurricane. You know, it's not going to stop a hurricane. So, carboxylic acids. I never did have a question about why the different carboxylic acids had different reactivities from each other. We talked about it, but I never did have a question about it, did I?
Why do they react differently?
Yes. You know, the inductive effects, the resonance effects, the hyperconjugation, whether you have anticipating enolate chemistry, whether you have one carbonyl or two. You know, all those structural effects. So, I'll just expand it. I'll say relative reactivity of carbonyl compounds, which we spent quite a bit of time on. We had acidic versus basic mechanisms. Again, expanding it, which I'm turning into the book's author now. You know, I teach aldehydes and ketones as aldehydes and ketones, and I teach carboxylic acids as carboxylic acids, but now I'm thinking of them all as kind of the same thing, because once you get to enolate reaction, a carbonyl is a carbonyl is a carbonyl. So acid and basic mechanisms of carbonyls. Of course, I'm not going to be asking specifically 12B material. Yes, we did talk about aldehydes and ketones last quarter. But when I'm referring it to here, think carboxylic acids and enolates. We had esterification and hydrolysis as our main cationic example of mechanism. We had saponification as our main example of an anionic mechanism. And we talked about reversibility. When could a reaction be reversible? When was it not? Just to put it in here, don't forget about diazomethane. We talked about how to make esters and amides. Making an amide is something that we all clearly forgot. I remember having to do a review of that. When was that? When was that? Just a week or two ago, I forget which reaction it was, but I was asking, how do you make an amide, and no one remembered. Oh, that's right, we were talking about the Merrifield resin synthesis. So now you really do need to know what an amide is. We had, and so don't forget about thionyl chloride. We have alkylation and reduction. Of all the different functional groups. And of course, remember that I loved talking about lactones and lactams. As far as types of problems, you're guaranteed to have one or two mechanisms. You're going to have simple synthesis. Same type of synthesis, or fill in the blank problems. So same type of problems we had for exam one will be the same types of problems we have on the final in terms of this topic material. So just as we did not do any complex multi-step syntheses on the test, you won't suddenly have complex multi-step syntheses on the final. Yes? Not only do you have to recall what they are, but in theory, you'd need to be able to explain why they're different. Yes, the fact that if you have two carbonyls, it can have at least a dozen or so orders of effect on the acidity of a compound. If you put a chlorine on, then induction effects will make something more acidic. If you put an oxygen on, then it's actually backwards from what you expect because what we learned last quarter, oxygen donates more than it takes away. So yes, all those same types of arguments you still need to be able to make. No, you need to spit out a number. Yes. No, it's... if you have the dialdehyde, it's 5. If you have the aldehyde ketone, it's 7. The diketone, 9. If you have the ester ketone, 11. The diester, 11. The aldehyde by itself, 16. The ketone by itself, 19. The ester by itself, 25. Yes. When I have reduction listed here, don't forget about dibal and the, I'll call it the other reagent. Also, don't forget about lithium aluminum hydride versus sodium borohydride, which not explaining why they're different because we did that last quarter, but just knowing synthetically what would happen if you had a ketone and a carboxylic acid. And you used either one of those reducing agents. Don't forget about nitriles. And whatever reactions that we covered are the reactions you're responsible for. Whatever we might have skipped at the time, it's still stuff that would be skipped for the purposes of the final. Now moving on to enolates. Yes, you need to know the pKa's. You have your two forms of alpha halogenation, acidic conditions where you have monohalogenation, and the basic conditions where you have the potential for the haloform reaction. You have your various condensations. So there's the aldol, mixed aldol, in other words, what makes an ideal aldol condensation. That was a lab lecture topic for the purposes of the lab exam, if I remember. But it's a lecture thing, which means it could be on the final. We have the Claisen condensation. We have the Dieckmann condensation. We have Michael addition. We have the Robinson annulation. And we have the Stork-enamine synthesis. The stork-enamine synthesis, where we take a carbonyl-containing compound, react it with an amine to make an enamine first, and then use that as a less charged intermediate for performing, for example, a Michael addition. This is why I wanted to do the review today, so that you, when you hear these words, you go, oh, crap, that's right, we did do that this quarter. I'm what? The biggest pushover in this department, you're calling me a big bully? Oh, you have no idea. Okay, so I'll say this for section two and put it on the microphone. Go ahead and listen. Because in I have to be careful about talking this at the same time, but I could say this much. From the interviews that I've been a part of and seeing all this nice, fresh energy that's coming in and all these wonderful ideas about what we're supposed to be doing in the classroom, and I look and think, what did I do with my class this quarter? And thinking, I would never get hired in a bazillion years right now. At least I have that feeling. So when you call me a big bully, it's like, oh, please. Because you all know just how much worse it really could be. Really, really could be.
Two-day group final, yeah.
How would it be better? We'll just do 52 pickup. You know, 52 pickup, where you take a pack of cards and you just put names and grades on them and just throw them in the air, and however you pick them up, that's the grades. That's 52 pickup. How about we continue with our review since we only got 10 minutes left? No, I'm not being a bully, because I could be like 2 years ago where I didn't do a review. They came to the final and they all went, oh, carboxylic acids. Like they all forgotten that we, literally, that they'd forgotten. That they, I mean, so they walked in the final and just got, smacked around. Ah, storic enemies synthesis on April 25th. Oh, how could I forget that? Alkylation. We already talked about reversibility. Oh, and remember the big type of problem that we did here, which is when given a product which reaction was used to make it? Yes. That's why we're doing the review today. Okay, let's see. Functional groups, relative reactivity, hydrolysis, saponification, solvolysis, reduction, alkylation, reversibility, transesterification. Oh, good. Alpha halogenation, aldol alkylation, malonic ester synthesis.
Oh, my God.
Oh my gosh, Dr. Gray, you're only listing the things that you actually taught us and that we're responsible for knowing. And oh, how dare you put those things on the final? Oh my goodness. Amines. What were the 7 ways we learned how to synthesize a single amine? Wasn't it 7? 8? Do I hear 9? I'll put it in quotes, which, you know, it could be 6 for very large values of 6 or 8 for very small values of 8. So I'll say 7 ways, whatever that real number is, to make an amine, including things like reductive amination, doing an actual discrete reduction of an imine. We have reductions of nitriles. We have reductions of amides. We have the Curtius and Hoffman rearrangements. For which you still have not written a mechanism for on an exam or quiz. For which you still have not yet written a mechanism for. There's the acid-base properties of amines. You know, why is it that when we put an alkyl group on, the amine gets more basic? Why is pyrrole very different in terms of its basicity compared to aniline, compared to just a plain old linear non-cyclic amine? Change that 7 into a 9. Because it was an SN2 reaction from alkyl halides, which normally doesn't work well, but remember we also used that to do the Hoffman elimination. Then there's a reduction of azides, hydrogenation of nitriles, reduction of amides, reduction of imines, reductive amination, the Gabriel synthesis. Of course, now, when I said malonic ester synthesis, you went, oh. And then I said, Gabriel, and he went, oh. Put the two of them together, that is the thalamidomalonic ester synthesis that you got right now in the amino acid chapter. So maybe if I was going to reduce the number of questions, I would ask about that particular version of it, which would have both the Gabriel and the melodic ester synthesis put together.
Let's see. Let me make sure that the 9th was a day that's in this section and not the other section. May 9th is a Wednesday, so yes.
I would look back at the notes from May 9th to review the stability of carbonates and carbonic acids, since that's related to your discussion that you'll do later on the lab quiz about Bach and Bach anhydride. And after this point, carbohydrates and amino acids. I'm not going to go over all those individual topics because they're so freshly and heavily reviewed. We talk about those carbohydrate problems forever, it seems like. Now, what's going to be the balance of questions on the final? No, probably more like one-third, one-third, one-third. Possibly even just because some of these questions are simple enough. The as far as time, it'd probably be a little more weighted to the carboxylic acid side of things, because we had so many more reactions that we covered. So just in terms of space on paper, the carboxylic, all these topics I've listed here might be a bit more than the questions you have on carbohydrates and amino acids. Now, what happens next week? Any material that I present next week is not on the final. Which one might say, oh, did you just tell us to take next week off? No, because if you are bio people, then we are going to be talking about DNA and lipids and terpenes and all those more interesting topics next week. So, if you don't care, then I'd ask you, why are you here? Because what career are you getting into? Because if you don't care about those things and you're on a bio career, 10 years from now when you wake up and realize it was the wrong career, you might want to consider what I'm saying now. If you don't have intellectual curiosity about anything, where are you going to get in life? So if you are interested in hearing about these topics, then show up next week. If not, I'm going to be here. It won't make any difference to me, but how much power do you have to learn and to propel your own self forward? That would be my response back. Simple enough. Questions? Section 2's lab is supposed to end at 2:15. It's going to end at 1 o'clock today. Hence why I'm dressed up this way. And next week, Section 2, they will have its normal timing, 11:30 to 2:10. Yes. Yes. I'm hoping to have Exam 2 to you Friday, after you take your exam, so it doesn't mess you up for your exam.